Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 10 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Monday, May the 14th. U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin co-authored a recently passed bill in the House of Representatives that expands the federal hate crime law. It would now cover acts based on a victim's gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. But President Bush has threatened to veto the bill, and our guest this hour says good. We'll be talking about the proposed expansion of the federal hate crimes law this hour with Jacob Sullum, who is senior editor of Reason Magazine, who'll explain why he thinks the bill is unnecessary, unjust, and unconstitutional. And we'll wonder what you think and welcome your questions for him. Do you think hate crime laws are important? Do you think it's a good idea or not for the federal government to expand the classes of people included in the hate crimes legislation? Who should be covered under them, if anyone? We want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest, Jacob Sullum, syndicated columnist and senior editor of Reason Magazine. He wrote a recent column, Looking for Hate in All the Wrong Places. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why do you think President Bush should veto this legislation should it come to his desk?
Well, first of all, the federal government has no business being involved with prosecuting these kinds of crimes. These are all things that are illegal already at the state level. In fact, almost all the states even have hate crime laws, so not only are the crimes themselves illegal, but so are the motivations that accompany them, which I also have a problem with. And this really vastly expands the federal government's authority in this area. Not only does it add the four categories that you mentioned to the victim categories, but it also eliminates the requirement that the victim be involved in a federally protected activity, such as voting or education. And the upshot of it, it means that the federal government can look at any case in the country, which is a crime of violence, and if it decides that bigotry was part of the motivation, it can second-guess local and state governments if it doesn't like the way that they prosecuted the case. If somebody is convicted and gets a punishment that the federal government does not think is severe enough, the federal government can prosecute again. If they are even acquitted, the federal government could come in, which raises double jeopardy problems in principle, if not in law, because of the fiction of two different sovereigns. And then you have the problem that you have with all the hate crime laws, which is that instead of punishing people for their behavior, for their actions that victimize others, you punish them for their ideas, for their beliefs, for their hatred of particular groups. Mm-hmm. In many cases, what that means is you're actually punishing them for their speech, because if somebody commits an assault and it happens to include a particular epithet, that makes it a hate crime. If it doesn't include that epithet, then it's an ordinary crime.
Yeah. Well, Wisconsin does have hate crime enhancers for crimes motivated by bigotry of some sort or hate of some sort if a victim is targeted because of that person's race, for example, not just if an epithet was uttered during the crime, but they're difficult to prove is my understanding that you have to prove that it was the discrimination that entirely motivated the crime, that person was picked because of that person's race or whatever.
Yes, but the question is, I guess the basic question is why do we do that? What is the justification for that? I believe Wisconsin's law was years ago overturned, by the way, and so it may have been narrowed since then to make it harder to prove the motivation. The state Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken, overturned it a number of years ago.
The U.S. Supreme Court, I thought, upheld that it was constitutional. We'll have to check into
that. We may not be thinking of the same decision, but in any case, the question is, why does the motivation matter? And the most convincing argument that I've heard is that these crimes are more damaging than ordinary crimes of violence or other kinds of crimes. And I should mention this, the federal law covers officially only crimes of violence, but the state laws cover a wider range of behaviors, and that might include things like vandalism or even a shouting match, mm-hmm. or some harassment or that kind of thing that isn't strictly speaking, violent. But the justification is generally said to be that they cause more damage. And the question is whether that's really true. You could imagine certainly cases where they would cause more damage in the sense of causing fear and raising anxiety within the targeted group. But there are many cases where people don't even know that a hate crime has been committed. So there really isn't that added element of anxiety. And, of course, ordinary crimes, if you attack people at random, for example, that also creates a lot of fear. In fact, you could argue it creates more fear because everyone feels like they're potential victims. So I'm not sure that that holds as a rule. And if, in fact, it is true that a particular crime of violence has caused widespread disruption and fear and anxiety and so forth, that's something that the judge could take into account at sentencing. I don't see why it ought to be an automatic trigger where really what you're going by is the person's beliefs about the targeted group.
We're going to check our weather forecast and then continue talking with Jacob Sullum, syndicated columnist, senior editor of Reason magazine, who wrote a recent column, Looking for Hate in All the Wrong Places, in which he criticizes the move in Congress to expand the federal hate crime law. The House of Representatives recently passed a bill that expands the federal hate crime law to cover a victim's gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. And as our guest mentioned, it removes the requirement that this crime be involved with some federally protected instance like voting or education. We wonder what you think. Do you think there should be a federal hate crime expansion? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May the 14th. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. In the 5 o'clock hour, Ben will talk with two guests with opposing plans for health care reform in Wisconsin. A health care reform debate coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about whether or not President Bush should veto hate crimes legislation that could be headed to his desk. The House of Representatives passed an expansion of the federal hate crime law. It was co-sponsored by Wisconsin's Tammy Baldwin. It would include crimes based on gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. The president says that he will veto this bill should it reach his desk. And we're talking with a guest who says he should veto it. Jacob Sullum, who is a senior editor of Reason magazine, thinks the bill is unnecessary and unjust and unconstitutional. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. And let's take our first caller, Jay in Madison. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to say that I basically agree with what your guest is saying. While I support almost everything else that Representative Baldwin does, I don't really agree with this, with her on this issue. In my opinion, the primary purpose of hate crimes law is to allow politicians to pat themselves on the back without actually doing anything substantial to reduce the root cause of hate crimes, which is intolerance and ignorance in our society. I think our efforts and energy would be a lot better put into programs like the Institutes for Racial Healing and other kinds of programs that really get to the root cause of hate crimes and intolerance in our society. So this is really just a big distraction from the real work that needs to be done.
Jacob Sullum?
Well, I certainly agree that this is basically a way for politicians to say they care, and it's a cost-free way for them. There's really no evidence that these crimes are being ignored at the state and local level, that there's a need for the federal government to step in. But by supporting this, they can make big speeches in the floor of Congress and say that they are against hate, of course. It's not that really bold a position to take that they're against hate crimes, but it gets them some good press.
Yeah, why do you say there's no evidence they're being ignored on the state level? I actually did a program not too long ago there haven't been that many, in Wisconsin anyway, prosecutions of hate crime violations, and at least compared to some other states in the union. And there was a lot of talk about how difficult these are to prove and maybe whether or not they were being used enough or not.
Yeah, what I meant by that is not whether they're prosecuted under hate crime laws or not, but whether, you know, if there were a case, and one doesn't have to create a hypothetical, in the Old South, crimes against black people were often ignored, if not actually supported by local officials. Now, that's a situation where there is justification for the federal government to get involved, because the state government is colluding with the criminals, in a sense. But there's no evidence that I've seen, anyway, that state and local officials are systematically ignoring crimes of violence or other kinds of crimes against people in certain victimized groups, whether it be because of race or religion or national origin or sexual orientation. In other words, that there's an assault committed, for example, and the police say, no, we're not going to get involved with this because we don't like this victim.
Yeah. The reason why supporters say this is necessary to put these enhancers, punishment enhancers, on crimes that are motivated by hate is that they are different than, you know, your run-of-the-mill whatever assault, in that the intent also is to instill fear in a whole group of people. And you disagree with that?
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. Certainly there are cases where that is the intent, but the intent may just be to strike at the member of a particular group. You hate him because he belongs to that group, without any thought as to what the broader effects might be. And, of course, the actual effects are independent of what the intent was. So somebody might, say, commit an act of violence thinking, an act of vandalism, say, vandalizes a synagogue. And the hope is that this will spread fear throughout the local Jewish community. But nobody ever actually hears about it. So, in fact, that isn't the result of this crime. So you can't really say that crime was more damaging than another act of vandalism, you know, that did not include anti-Semitic epithets or whatever. So it really does depend upon the case as to what the broader consequences are. I can see the argument that in some cases there are more consequences than you would have if there weren't fears raised within a particular group. But it really is a very fact-specific thing, and the laws do not hinge on what the actual consequences are. They hinge on the person's beliefs, right, about the targeted group, which are often manifested in what they say.
Yeah. Now, the president, what I heard him say when he threatened to veto the bill was that the states can prosecute these hate crimes. The federal government doesn't need to be involved. And that's your point?
That's one of my points. Mm-hmm. I don't approve of the laws at the state level either, because mm-hmm. I think that they punish people for their beliefs. And I don't think it's justified to do that. You know, as a matter of freedom of conscience. But I also think there is no constitutional authority for the federal government to be involved in this area. The argument that is used, if you look at the bill, is that this is a matter of regulating interstate commerce. And that's based on a very broad definition of interstate commerce. For example, if a crime, an assault, is committed with a baseball bat, and the baseball bat was not manufactured in the state where the crime occurred, well, that makes it interstate commerce, according to this bill. If the person who is the victim is involved in economic activity when he's attacked, that makes it a matter of regulating interstate commerce, right? So you can see that this is a very broad definition, which really means any time they want to get involved, they can, and it's some question of the Justice Department's discretion as to when they're going to choose to prosecute.
Yeah, that interstate commerce seems like it is a stretch. Wouldn't it be similar to, some sort of civil rights? I mean, that's federal oversight, isn't it?
Well, you can make that argument for cases involving racial discrimination. If there's some kind of official, you know, government complicity in it, then there is an argument for the federal government to get involved. But in this case, the only constitutional justification is that this is interstate commerce. And like I said, that basically means that if the federal government is going to use that broad a definition of interstate commerce, it means that they can take on prosecution of any crime they want just by saying it's a matter of regulating interstate commerce. And it really obliterates the distinction between the state and federal governments. And this is part of a broader trend where the federal government is, or Congress is federalizing a whole wide range of crimes because they happen to be in the news. People happen to be upset about them. Another example was carjacking. You may recall was federalized some time ago because there was a series of carjackings that were publicized in the press. And there really is no justification for that sort of thing except that somebody in Washington wants to make a statement.
Yeah. Let me bring in Dave from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'm glad you brought this this program on. You know, your guest has brought up, you know, something very interesting. They want to do something about these people's beliefs. Who heaven knows that we'd want to go after their beliefs. The problem is, where are they getting these beliefs? They're getting these beliefs from hate mongers like Dr. Dobson on Faith in the Family, and I listen to his show just so I can understand my enemies. This guy spews hatred and filth about gay people. Now, I don't know any gay people. I don't, but God made that gay person, whoever that person is. And the idea is, because they're real upset. Faith in the Family talks about this all the time. Boy, this is the end of them because they keep people motivated against gay people. Now, if you commit a crime against a gay person and you don't say anything during that crime, then it's not a hate crime. But let's say you get arrested and you get questioned, and during the questioning, something comes out like, well, they listen to Dr. Dobson all the time, and they tell me this guy, you know, now that is where this bill is going, because these groups are dangerous, these religious groups.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for your opinion on that, but that is right, Jacob Sullum, that religious conservatives are upset with this bill.
Yes, very upset with this bill, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it adds homosexuals and also transsexuals as categories of victims. And that they claim that it upsets them first because they're worried about possible ramifications in the situation, just like the one the caller described, where, say, a minister gets up and rails against homosexuals, says this is evil, this is sinful, this is condemned in the Bible, and one of his congregants goes out and assaults a gay man. And not only is the person who commits the assault charged under the scenario, but the minister could also be charged based on existing federal law, which makes it a crime basically to encourage or cajole or to advise somebody to commit a crime. That seems like a stretch to me. Certainly it's possible that charges could be brought, but I think you'd have a hard time winning a prosecution like that under existing First Amendment law, which says that you have to be, in a situation like that, you have to be willfully inciting people to commit an imminent, you know, crime.
Yeah, I have to jump in because we're at news time, but then we'll continue talking with Jacob Sullum about why he opposes federal hate crime bills coming up after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Monday, May the 14th. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill that increases the scope of the federal hate crimes law. The Senate is expected to take this issue up soon as well. President Bush has threatened a veto of the bill if it reaches his desk, and we're talking with a guest who says, good, the president should veto this bill because he says that hate crime laws and this federal hate crime bill is unnecessary, unjust, and unconstitutional. We welcome your reactions and your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. The proposed expansion of the federal hate crime law would cover acts based on a victim's gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. Our guest is Jacob Sullum, syndicated columnist, senior editor of Reason Magazine. He wrote a recent column, Looking for Hate in All the Wrong Places. Jacob Sullum, we just talked about how Christian or religious conservatives were opposed to this bill because they thought it was going to be possible for a minister who condemns homosexuality from the pulpit to somehow get prosecuted for a hate crime if a member of his or her congregation would go out and beat up a gay person because of being incited by the minister. You are even saying that you think that that argument is a stretch.
Well, it certainly would be a stretch to try to bring such a prosecution. It's based on federal law that says somebody who counsels, commands, or induces somebody else to commit a federal crime can be liable himself, but that is constrained by the First Amendment, which says that unless you actually intend that someone commit the crime right away, and it's likely that your exhortation is going to cause them to do that, then you can't be punished for what you said. But their fear, I think, is that the addition of homosexuality and transsexuality as categories to this bill is going to have a chilling effect on speech like one of your callers earlier was condemning. And there is a certain logic to that in the sense that, yes, what is the root cause of hate crimes if the motivation is bigotry against particular groups? And obviously people who encourage you to hate members of those groups are, in a sense, a root cause. But that speech and those beliefs are all protected by the First Amendment. And that is, of course, part of my concern when you punish the actual criminal not just for what he did, but also for what he thought, what he believed. And by the way, when every time you federalize a crime like this, you also open up the potential for serial prosecutions at both the state and federal levels, which is in itself troubling, because what that means is that the federal government can step in any time it doesn't like the result in a criminal case where it perceives there to be some kind of biased motivation. And prosecute the case again. You can punish a person twice. You can try them twice if they were acquitted the first time. And that's considered constitutionally okay because it's two different governments, two different sovereigns. But I think we really should be disturbed by that kind of precedent where they don't like the result the first time, so they come in and prosecute the person again.
Yeah, let me take another call. Betty in Partyville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, your caller from Michigan was incorrect in many of his facts. Dr. Dobson is not a minister. He is a psychologist and a physician. And his focus on the family is not promoting or not telling people of homosexual lifestyle that they are going to hell. He is, in fact, saying if you are uncomfortable in the situation that you're in, that there is a way that you can get out. And people in many situations need help to get out of bad situations.
Yeah, I don't want to shift the I understand
no,
you want
I'm,
to correct
what...
No, I want
what, to get yeah, but, back. Then I yeah, want to get... Mm-hmm. Those were the inconsistencies of that caller. But I want to say that the hate crime, Canada has passed similar things. And you cannot have a viewpoint at all that is anti-quote government, or you will be prosecuted for that crime.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Okay, well, we could go back to that homosexual thing, that if I, as one of those, quote, radical Christians, feel that the lifestyle is bad, I cannot judge the individual. I cannot do that. The Bible tells me I cannot do that. But I can see that a harmful lifestyle is out there.
Yeah,
and I can no longer say that, or many other things like living with a person. Yeah. I personally might feel that.
Betty, isn't it true though that this bill would not punish you for not approving of a homosexual lifestyle, but it would punish you if you were beating up someone or committing some crime against someone. Because you felt that way and that you were, you know, maybe shouting it as you were beating that person up.
Well, that's wrong. That's totally wrong. But the fact that they could trace this case in out west where that young man was beat up, it was said because somebody he listened to a radical program, that happened, and that was totally untrue. So they'll dig up things that are untrue, and I just feel that is...
Yeah. I'm glad you called, very glad you called, Betty, because Jacob Sullum, this bill is not going, this law, should it become law, would not punish Betty because she disapproves of the homosexual lifestyle.
No, I think there are a couple of things being mixed together here. There are laws in other countries, like Canada, like the UK, like France, which actually do regulate speech. So that if you say something that is offensive to a particular group, for example, you can actually be prosecuted for that. Or if you deny the Holocaust, you can be prosecuted for that. If you incite, you know, racial hatred and so forth. This country has much more robust protections for freedom of speech, so we don't have legislation like that. I doubt any kind of legislation like that would ever be upheld by the courts. But I think the fear is that we're moving in that direction. That's what the religious conservatives are saying. They see what these other countries are doing. I think to some extent the fear is exaggerated because we have the First Amendment and they don't. But there is a principle at stake here because even when the law operates in the way it is designed to operate, by definition, it is punishing people for their beliefs. That's what it comes down to. Because if they hate the group that their victim belongs to and they have reasons for hating them, however misguided or crazy those reasons might be, it's their right to have those beliefs. It's obviously not their right to commit the crime. But they're being punished not just for the crime, but also for the beliefs. And that's even if everything works exactly as it's advertised.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far off focus, but seriously, Canada has laws on the books that would punish you if you said something that the government didn't like?
I don't think it's as broad as that. But, for example, it's a crime to deny the Holocaust there. In France, it's a crime to incite hatred against particular religious groups. They can actually bring charges against you for that sort of thing. So other countries do not have protections that are as broad as ours for freedom of speech. And in fact, it has moved in that direction there because they have said, well, why are these crimes of violence being committed? It's because people have these beliefs. Why do they have these beliefs? It's because other people are inciting them and propagandizing them. We have to crack down on that. So I do understand there is a certain logic to that, and I understand that fear, but I think it is, to a large extent, exaggerated as long as we have the First Amendment.
Yeah. Indeed, this bill Betty brought up of that young man out west, that was Matthew Shepard, the gay man who was beaten to death by other men in Wyoming, who apparently they were convicted of this because he was gay. The bill in the Senate is named after Matthew Shepard, and I mean, shouldn't the Matthew Shepards of the world have federal protection?
Well, the people who committed that murder were prosecuted. I believe they got life sentences, if not mistaken. If not the death penalty. So what more does a hate crime, especially a federal hate crime bill, give you? Obviously, I think that's an appropriate punishment. If you approve of the death penalty would be appropriate in that sort of case. If you don't like the death penalty, then life in prison without parole is the right penalty. But that's regardless of why they did what they did, regardless of what their beliefs might have been about homosexuals, they deserve that penalty.
Yeah. And the supporters of the bill say that this bill, the federal enhancers and this new legislation would make federal resources available to local law enforcement officials for the investigation and prosecution of hate crimes. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's just not a federal responsibility. I mean, I guess the question is, show me where in the Constitution that's authorized. And they can't.
Yeah.
No, that's why they end up...
Your fear was is that they'd actually step in and say, you should prosecute this one as a hate crime and we're getting involved.
Right. There are a couple of aspects to it. One is what you're talking about. There are grants that would be available, and there's also assistance by the federal government if local officials want to do a hate crime prosecution. But there also are provisions where the federal government can step in and prosecute the case even without a request from local officials. Basically, if they didn't like the way that things went, if they thought either that the case wasn't being prosecuted as a hate crime and it should have been, or they didn't like the penalty, or maybe they didn't even like an acquittal. It doesn't say that specifically, but it says if they think that the federal interest in eliminating hate crime has not been properly vindicated, then they can prosecute it at the federal level.
Our guest is Jacob Sullum. He is a syndicated columnist, senior editor of Reason magazine. He's telling us why he doesn't like hate crime legislation and why he thinks President Bush should veto an expansion of the federal hate crime law should it reach his desk. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, it's the State Capitol Report. I'll talk with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, about the most important issues being debated and or passed and or defeated in the state legislature from the past week, and we'll look ahead to the week to come. We're talking about a controversial piece of federal legislation. It was passed by the House of Representatives. It enhances or increases the scope of the federal hate crimes law. It adds categories of victims to it. A hate crime is defined as any crime that willfully causes bodily injury to any person because of that person's actual or perceived race, color, religion, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. The Senate is likely to take this bill up soon, maybe next month, and President Bush has already threatened to veto it should it reach his desk. We're talking with a guest who says that the president should veto it because he thinks hate crime laws are unjust and unconstitutional and unnecessary on the federal level. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, if you have a thought or a question about this. Our next caller is Megan in Maguanago. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Since, as far as I understand, protection is extended to everyone regardless of your sexual orientation, since we're all protected, I really don't see what the problem is. It's not just for homosexuals, right? It's for all sexuals. That's all. Thanks.
Yes, you're right. In principle, the law could be used to prosecute somebody who attacked a heterosexual because he was a heterosexual. In practice, that's not, going to happen very often. Most often it's going to be, if it's based on sexual orientation, it will be somebody who's gay who is the victim. But the question is, either way, I mean, I have the same objection, either way, whether it's, you can turn it around in the case of race as well. In fact, I believe a large percentage of the hate crimes that have a racial motivation involve white victims, which may be contrary, maybe even most of them. Which is contrary to probably what people expect. But either way, what you're doing is punishing the person for the beliefs that they have about members of that group. And that, to me, is the crux of the issue when it comes to the freedom of conscience problem. One other point, you mentioned that the way that they defined the hate crime in the federal bill is that the crime is committed because of, in one of those categories. Well, one of them is because of gender. So a question I have is, whether heterosexual rape in general could not be considered to be a hate crime on that basis. And therefore, is this bill, in essence, federalizing every rape committed in America? I don't know the answer to that, but it seems like you could make an argument that heterosexual rape is, by definition, a hate crime. Mm-hmm. It's committed because of the gender of the victim.
Next, we go to Larry in Madison. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I was thinking that the origins of this legislation really came from the civil rights era, when the federal government was necessary to intervene because in several southern states, such as in the murder of the three civil rights workers, the state courts did not follow through, and therefore there had to be another kind of a way to intervene. And the question becomes, for other groups in the country today, does that really hold? And for instance, if can someone who is gay get a proper hearing in the state courts if they're attacked, for example?
Yeah. So you're in favor of this, Larry?
Frankly, I'm not sure. I think I'd be in favor of it if the federal intervention were necessary because the state courts really are not following it. Not giving due process to two particular groups.
I mean, are those, is that an argument for the federal legislation, Jacob Sellum?
I haven't heard anybody make that argument. That's the thing. I mean, unlike the case in Jim Crow South, where, mm-hmm. where local officials were actually either ignoring these crimes or going along with them, I don't believe you have that situation in America today. If somebody can, you know, point to evidence to the contrary, I'd be happy to look at it. But basically, you don't have a situation where you could have a 14th Amendment argument that there's people are being denied equal protection of the laws. And it's not a matter of the state government willfully ignoring these crimes. And by the way, and it's distinct from the question of how exactly they're prosecuting them. The question isn't, are they prosecuting them as hate crimes, but are they prosecuting them?
Yes, right. And that, I think, is the most important thing. Interestingly, Deborah Lipstadt, who won her case in Britain against David Irving, the Holocaust denier, and is obviously very much involved in this kind of issue in terms of Holocaust, herself came out against his being jailed in Europe,
right,
for that. So one could be opposed to this legislation and still be very much in favor of support for various victimized groups.
Yes, and by the way, the reason that Deborah Lipstadt was sued in the UK is that they don't have as robust protection for freedom of speech. They have libel laws that make it easier to sue. So that's another example of why we should be thankful that we live in America.
Yeah, thank you, Larry, for the call. Scott in Menasha is next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning. I had a question. In the court's eyes, is there a difference between someone saying, do you have to use the word hate, versus I disagree with or I don't like? There's a lot of things I don't like, and if I would, you know, get in trouble over it, would it be a hate crime? I hesitate to use the word hate. That's a strong word. I don't say I hate things, but I strongly disagree with or dislike things.
Right. It doesn't hinge on whether you actually used the word. It's a question of what your motivation was, whether the person was targeted because they were a member of a particular protected group. And I guess we should also mention that there are lots of other groups you could imagine being thrown in there. One of the categories that they're proposing to add to the federal law is disability. But you could imagine political ideology. Certainly that might be a motivation for a crime, and we might want to discourage that for reasons similar to the arguments for discouraging crimes against other groups. You know, people based on age, if you go after children because they're children, or old people because they're old people. There are many other categories that you could start to add there, and then maybe eventually they would cover everyone, in which case we could just go back to enforcing the law against actual crimes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Scott. I did ask my producer, Karen Prager, to look up the Supreme Court action on Wisconsin's law, because I just remember this from many years ago. And I'm looking here at an article from 1993, and it was the U.S. Supreme Court did uphold Wisconsin's hate crime bill.
Right, it was after the state Supreme Court overturned it, though, correct?
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, that's why it went to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
But yeah, that's right. But it was that, that of all things, Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who's from or was from Wisconsin, wrote the opinion that it was constitutional, I guess. I remember the argument always being that this was not punishing thought, it was punishing the action of beating up that person or killing that person, but enhancing it because of the motivation. It wasn't that you were punishing the thought, you were punishing the behavior, the crime that was committed.
Right. Well, you're punishing the behavior, and then you're adding punishment for, you would say, the motivation, but another way of putting mm-hmm. that is what the person believed, because mm-hmm. it amounts to the same thing. And obviously, I mean, that's why the courts have upheld these laws, because they're persuaded by the argument that there's an important difference there. And obviously, there is a difference in the sense that this person has committed something that would be considered a crime in any case, and so he's going to be punished anyway, but then there's an additional punishment, and the question is, what is that additional punishment for? And my argument is that it amounts to a punishment for what that person believes, and that is not justified, not fair.
And there is an editorial today in the Washington Post that is in favor of the federal hate crimes bill. The Washington Post did not want gender included, but
is willing to go along with this. The Senate takes this up next month. Do you have any predictions as to what's going to happen?
Oh, it's going to pass the Senate, and I think Bush will veto it. Not necessarily for any sound principled reasons, but because the religious conservatives want him to. I don't think they're going to be able to overcome the veto, looking at the numbers now.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jacob Sullum, syndicated columnist and senior editor of Reason magazine. He wrote a recent column, Looking for Hate in All the Wrong Places, in which he says that the federal hate crime bill, a bill that would add more categories to the federal hate crime law, including victims that are targeted because of their sexual orientation, he thinks that this bill should be vetoed by President Bush. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour, and thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.